Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol in politics. I want to thank the Capitol Times political reporter, Capitol reporter, Jesse, for joining us.
Thanks for letting me know.
JR is off somewhere, but we will do our thing.
We'll see what we can do without him.
Yeah. First, as always, Wis I Was There is a summary of where events that we covered. Obviously, we're going to open with the jubilation by our governor in Foxconn. Then we're going to get to the CEO of Aurora Healthcare. And, let's just watch it. Wis I Was There.
Wow. This is a big day for Wisconsin. It is a big day for Foxconn. This is something that will say to the world, we have arrived. The eagle has landed, and it spread its wings, and it's taken off again. We are ready.
You know, so I don't know that that's mismanagement as much as it is just not a focus on the details of the day-to-day operation in pursuing projects like roundabouts when the locals don't even want them. I have a number of projects in my district that the DOT spent millions of dollars looking at, you know, through research and development, and projects the communities don't even want.
Well, the audit pointed out that the DOT was ignoring statutorily required reporting requirements to the legislature and the TPC. When they were doing reports, they were cooking the books. And so I think what you've seen was a purposeful attempt by some to really not tell the legislature and the TPC the whole story and what is really going on. And I think that's more alarming to me than anything.
National studies have shown that the turnover rate is high. The national research shows it's between 30 and 40% for child welfare caseworkers. We know that's has negative consequences. That's negative consequences on the continuity of relationships with children and family, and it can prolong time in care.
It's a right. It's such an important part of life for everyone that the access to health care and how we approach it is going to be fundamentally important in how this country does in the future.
It was after my accident that my health insurance company, despite paying her premiums on time and doing everything right and playing by the rules, said that I was nearing my lifetime maximums and they were going to kick me off. And that, I had months left of rehabilitation that was going to cost tens of thousands of dollars. My wheelchair was going to be another 50 grand. My wife and I were just students at the time and we had no idea how we were going to pay for it. It was a couple days later after that that we received a letter from our health insurance company saying that the provisions of the Affordable Care Act are kicking in. They got rid of those lifetime maximums. I can honestly say that the ACA saved me. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for those protections.
Okay, Jesse, obviously huge news for the governor, economic development. A big score for Wisconsin, potentially. I was struck by what's being said about this. The state's largest economic development project, largest corporate attraction project in U.S. history as measured by jobs, $10 billion capital investment, $5.7 billion from Wisconsin businesses, 10,000 construction jobs, and when operational, and that's key, 13,000 jobs, and they when they open in 2020, 3,000 jobs. So, sorry, I went first, but how did you feel hearing this giant economic development announcement?
I mean, it's big at every level, right? It's a large size. They like to say 11 Lambeau Fields in Wisconsin terms, but yes. You know, it's going to be, I think, 1,000 acres, wherever this is. Huge number of jobs, and it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money from Foxconn, that $10 billion, but potentially $3 billion coming from the state. So it's just big at every level, and I think you know, the governor is using the word transformational, trying to sell this as not just insulated within this deal, but something that he believes is going to transform the region into this Wisconsin Valley, cribbing off of Silicon Valley, but also transforming the state and even potentially just bringing more manufacturing back to the country. Of course, that remains to be seen if that's going to be the effect here, but
And talking
That's the
about
sell.
Some of those partnerships with existing businesses and current businesses. And, well, some more, a new high-tech manufacturing and technology ecosystem.
Right.
And this is a campus of how big, 1,000 acres?
1,000 acres, I believe, yeah.
1,000 acres and returning electronic manufacturings to U.S. from Asia. And these, what's going to be made here?
So it's liquid crystal displays or LCD. So, you know, those are TV screens, computer screens, I think potentially phone screens. I think Walker mentioned even dashboards on some of the newer vehicles, too, are using that.
Right.
And it's a newer technology I'm not super familiar with, but this is something that is, you know, I think you mentioned LCDs aren't being manufactured really outside of Asia.
I think, South Korea, yeah. Japan, Taiwan, and China. They really like the corridor from Chicago to Milwaukee, right? Because
right.
we don't know where this plant, assuming it's going to be built, mm-hmm. is going to actually... Which county?
Sounds like,
Racine?
Yeah, Racine, Kenosha. And something else, I think, you know, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did some good reporting on this, but the proximity to water is apparently a selling point on this because, you know, these things are manufactured in clean rooms, which is a whole, you know, technical aspect, but they need a lot of water to make the LCD displays. And being close to Lake Michigan is a huge selling point, I think. You know, Chairman Goh talked about the... wherever it ends up being sort of in the middle of the country between the east and the west coast as the muscle of the right. Of the country.
And yeah. the average wage, assuming these jobs come, is $53,875. And if you break that down hourly, Jesse, it's $25.90 on a 40-hour work week.
Yeah.
Pretty good wage?
Pretty good wage, I think. You know, the initial skepticism for most people or the concern was, is this going to be family-supporting jobs? And that's certainly nothing to sneeze at. The question is some of the lower, you know, the entry-level ones, maybe more like $13 or $15 an hour, I think. But, you know, it's a range.
We have a state unemployment rate of 3.1, which the governor touts. You mm-hmm. know, what would he say? Party like it's 1995, remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah,
and
99.
You have a 99, thanks for the correction. And you have a corridor there with Amazon and Kenosha County. Workforce issues, do you think?
That's a great question. I think, you know, it's hard to hear the governor and really everyone talking about how the state has a workforce needs issue, not so much as a jobs issue. You know, he said the theme this year isn't jobs, jobs, jobs anymore. It's workforce, workforce, workforce. Well, here's a whole bunch of jobs. Where's that workforce coming from? They say that they're ready. They say that they're going to have to start investing, though, in workforce training, whether it's tech schools or UW or apprenticeship programs. But, you know, they say they can do it. So,
well, I'm going to make a confession, Jesse. Up against Michigan, up against some of these other states, I really had a question whether Wisconsin would get it. Did you have that same question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of it is we saw those states putting up the numbers, though. You know, we knew that they were offering pretty large incentive packages, and they were prepared to do it. So, you know, it was all a little more behind the scenes here.
Yeah.
I was wondering.
Yep. Let's talk about those incentive packages. The governor said it could total $3 billion over 15 years. And you heard Speaker Voss and the governor say, if there's no jobs, they don't get any incentives. Now, we might have heard that before, but this is a new deal and a new era. So let's talk about some of those incentives. Up to $1.5 billion in state income tax credits for job creation, up to $1.35 billion in state income tax credits for capital investment, and a sales tax holiday on construction materials, $150 million. First blush, do you think people are going to understand the idea of incentives and think this is too generous or not generous enough? Because you and I read some stories. Other states apparently offered a lot more. Excuse me, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, there's no question it's a large package, and the governor said as much yesterday at the announcement. You know, we've seen some of these terms about 2 years ago in the Milwaukee Bucks Arena deal. They also, you know, included that sales tax holiday for construction. So, you know, interesting to see what sort of other strings are tied to that. You know, how much of the materials needs to come from Wisconsin? How many workers are coming from Wisconsin? I think they said, you know, about half of that $10 billion investment is going to be Wisconsin businesses. So, yeah, it's a big number. I think people universally think it's a big number. You're probably going to be a little more likely to swallow that large number if you're living closer to the area where you're going to be benefiting from it than maybe someone in the southwestern or northwestern corner of the state.
This issue continues to amaze me because TMJ noted that Peter Fagan, the Bucks owner, flew to the White House as part of this announcement. So, yeah. Did you hear this today?
I just heard. Yeah.
Potential naming rights.
Oh, of Bucks I didn't Arena? Hear that. No, I didn't hear that.
Okay, now that's what TMJ Radio was reporting. That's not Jesse and I saying that, but cool. That's discussed. Name Foxconn would name
interesting.
The Bucks well. Arena. But let's talk about some other issues that haven't really surfaced. When I look at the Memorandum of Understanding, page 2. Okay, I'm just going to read one sentence. Both sides will work cooperatively with local, state, and federal officials to site and construct this this site or plant, including providing a site plan that will address utility and transportation infrastructure requirements. Now, you and I have covered a budget impasse that we'll get to in a minute. So you have water issues, you have utility issues, and you have transportation because before your time in the Capitol, we had to build a 4-lane road to get to the GM plant, which is, rest in peace, no more. So don't you think there's a lot of the actual details that we don't know yet?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that was starting to be discussed yesterday is I-94 north-south. How does that factor into this? That's already a sticking point in the budget. I think people would like to see that completed to make something like this happen. But does that become part of the budget negotiation, or is that something we take up later?
And now Speaker Voss is saying, let's debate this in a special session in August, because the Memorandum of Understanding, which we all have copies of, says the package is due at the end of September?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's
so
good.
It sounds like, you know, they want to move quickly on it.
Yeah, they do. Boy, never a dull moment. Let's listen to the governor talking about those incentives. And Wisconsin, I also interviewed, as you saw in the WIS I was there, Representative Jimmy Anderson, who raised this question, are these incentives worth it? So let's go to the next audio clip, please.
This is about Foxconn committing to investing $10 billion in the state of Wisconsin that will lead to 13,000 jobs. So the state of Wisconsin in this memorandum of understanding is committing to invest and provide incentives worth $3 billion, which is big. It's bigger than anything we've done before.
Why Wisconsin? People. People should be trust each other. You go to East Coast or go West Coast? Who don't care who, right? Here, everybody is team together.
So, the Foxconn deal. I haven't seen any of the work behind the scenes. I don't know what is in the actual incentive package. The idea that we could spend $3 billion of taxpayer money, of which some of that's going to be coming from my district as well, and to not bring on any Democratic voices to add to the discussion, I think is frustrating. Take high-speed rail. Those are federal taxpayer dollars that we've already spent, and yet we don't want to bring those jobs here to the state, but we're willing to spend that amount of money, between $300,000 and $1 million per job, to bring Foxconn here, of which we've already seen they haven't been able to produce those jobs in other states where they've tried to make these kind of grand guarantees. So I think that we need to be smart about bringing jobs to the state, but we shouldn't be selling the entire house to bring people here.
Jesse, you and I have seen some of the statements put out by the Democrats. They seem to be quoting Reagan, you know, trust but verify.
Right.
And some of the sentences from the leaders of their statements, from Assembly Leader Barca: this has the potential to make an enormous impact economically on the region. That's why the governor and the ledge must protect taxpayers and provide opportunities for long-term family-supporting jobs. Let's go back to that number, 53,800. Mm-hmm. Senate Democratic Leader Schilling: I welcome new businesses, but I want to ensure that any state-subsidized private sector jobs offer a living wage and safe working conditions. Jennifer's statement here: we will have to see if there's a legislative appetite for a $1 billion to $3 billion corporate welfare package. Interesting term. Mm-hmm. Finally, Chris Larson, Democratic Senator from Milwaukee: we look to partner with companies that will respect our state's shared lands and waters. If they expect special treatment, they need to have long-term commitment to our state. Let's talk about the political ramifications. Potential huge upside to Wisconsin's economy. How critical can Democrats be, Jesse?
It's a really fine line that they have to walk, I think. If this pans out as promised, it's a...
operational in 2020.
Right. It's good for Scott Walker. And he's got a little bit of time because his reelection is in 2018. So it doesn't really have to have panned out all the way. It just has to be on its way there. And it's really hard to knock jobs. It's really hard to knock an influx of manufacturing. What it sounds like we're getting from most Democrats is cautious optimism, urging skepticism. You know, you've seen people in the region, like Peter Barca, a little more willing to embrace it just because it is their neck of the woods. I mean, these are jobs in their district.
It's his district. It's the 64th district, which has Amazon and all that. So they do have to be careful, don't they?
They do, I think. You know, the flip side of that, though, is what we saw with the Bucks deal, is people outstate may not be as supportive of this because it's not directly in their region. So maybe those Democrats have a little bit more room to go after this a little bit.
Unless they hope their children are able to get jobs at Foxconn, 13,000 jobs. This clearly has become an issue in the next election for governor. I just want to read one of the candidates that's out there are going to be very soon is Mike McCabe. Mm-hmm. Mr. Blue Jean Nation, who plans to run as a Democrat. He said, $3 billion can be spent to build one international conglomerate's global empire, or it could be much more productively invested to empower 5 million people in our state with things like health care for all, debt-free education, and internet that reaches every doorstep. Let me read just one more paragraph. The Foxconns of the world repeatedly play states and entire countries off against each other, so others pay to pad their bottom lines. They make a killing off these transactions. Later, voters realize they've been played for suckers. Now, I haven't had a chance. What's been the response of some other Democratic candidates?
Yeah, so Andy Gronick, the Milwaukee businessman who's kind of coming in as a political outsider to a degree, he's pretty much on board with this. I haven't really seen him say anything negative about it. It's new jobs. It's a good thing. On the other hand, Representative Dana Walks, who hasn't officially entered the race but seems to be getting closer and closer, is a little more measured, a little more kind of what we're seeing from other Democrats in the legislature. You know, let's be careful, but of course we should, you know, work to bring in more jobs. You know, people are bringing up what Mike McCabe alluded to, the track record of Foxconn and other companies who have tried to do things like this. Yeah. You know, Foxconn made a promise in Pennsylvania in 2013 that was supposed to be a much smaller deal. I think it was only about 500 jobs, in fact, but never panned out. So, you know, they've got history to point to say maybe we should be careful with this, but it's still a risky political game to play.
I think if Foxconn actually has shovels in the ground by the November 18 election, that's a big point for Governor Walker, don't you think?
I think it's hard to argue with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's turn to a new subject. Thank you, Foxconn, for giving us the first half of the show. there was an old public service announcement. You may remember it. It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your kids are? Do you remember that?
It's a little old well, for it, me, but I'm familiar.
But it's July 28th.
Yeah.
Do you know where the state budget is?
It's stuck.
We saw no progress this week, right?
No. We haven't seen progress in several weeks. It looked like we were going to get progress. So was it a week ago? So, you know, the assembly said we've got a deal with the governor.
Right.
End of the day, Senate came out. Nope.
We really want to abolish personal property taxes. The price tag on that is $239. Mm-hmm. So we're on track to have one of the latest budgets. I did the research, the wonk in me. The latest time that we passed a budget, and it's important that it was just a transportation budget, was November 16th of 1995. And that, Governor Thompson proposed an oil franchise fee, a new source of revenue, in addition to the gas tax and the vehicle registration fee, and his fellow Republicans, how's that for a parallel? No. So then the two co-chairs of finance, Representative Bransell and Senator Tim Wheaton, asked for a transportation budget to be introduced, which passed on November 16th. We've also passed budgets later than now on September 29th of 97, October 6th of 99, October 23rd of 2007, and we don't know when we're going to get this budget. There doesn't seem to be. Are you picking up any hue and cry demand? Pass the budget, Jesse.
I mean, it seems like if not for transportation, we'd be there by now. But it's funny because you'll hear from any given day from, you know, one legislator will say, oh, I go home and no one's talking about the budget yet because they don't notice a difference. We keep operating under the same budget, so it's not a big deal. And then the other side will say, you know, oh, all I hear is, why haven't you passed a budget yet? And it's probably a little bit of both, right? But Everything else, it seems like they've gotten there. I mean, they've passed a lot out of joint finance already. We're pretty much down to education, taxes, and transportation. And right. I think you can get there on education and taxes, but no one's really given up on any ground on transportation.
When the Democrats say schools need to know what their budget is for the next year, others say, look, schools have a pretty good estimate. They can make some hiring decisions. Who's right on that?
I'd say it's a little bit of both, right? I mean, schools, they want that certainty, of course. But, you can always just budget based on the idea of what you think you're going to get or what you got before. And if it gets rosier, you can deal with it. I think that's what makes this budget maybe a little bit different, too, is that schools are getting more money, if anything. So, they can budget for less and come in with more if need be. But, of course, everyone likes to know what they need to plan for. They like to have those numbers in place.
And there's also the issue of the August letting by the Department of Transportation.
Right.
I don't understand that. So, and I'm not going to pretend that I
yeah.
do.
That's a little right. in the weeds.
Yeah, it is. We had our first Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate,
yeah,
Kevin Nicholson.
Yeah.
He's 39. I gave the age. Where's he from? Do you remember?
Delafield.
Okay.
Yeah.
I give the age.
We're
quite a team.
Yeah.
he said in his YouTube, career politicians in both parties are hijacking our future. They spend too much, talk too much, and what little they actually do makes America weaker. I was a Democrat, but after you've been hit in the face with that much reality, you cannot help but become a strong conservative. A spokesman for Tammy Baldwin, who he would be opposing if he wins the nomination, a political opportunist who is willing to lie about his own biography to earn the support of out-of-state billionaire. Significance of the first Republican getting in, Jesse?
It's interesting. I mean, he also drew criticism pretty immediately from another likely Republican candidate,
Senator Vukmir.
What
did she say? Remind us.
She said a lot of the things that the Baldwin spokesman said it sounded like. She basically said, I'm not familiar with his conservative record. In contrast, she has one to point to. The unspoken thing there in all of those quotes is that Kevin Nicholson was a member of the College Democrats. He was actually president of the College Democrats of America.
Yes.
In the early 2000s. He spoke at the convention. He was pretty out there on that. And he says he's had an evolution, a transformation, a conversion.
An epiphany, a political epiphany.
I talked to him. He likened it to the Ronald Reagan conversion. And he says when you convert, you become a strong believer. So there's nothing to worry about there. But on the other hand, people will say that's opportunism. And he's what is significant, I think, in his race is he's got a super PAC already lined up behind him. Richard Uihlein has poured in millions of dollars.
That's out-of-state money,
isn't it?
Out-of-state
money, yep.
He's Illinois?
Illinois.
And how much has he ponied up? Is it three-plus million?
They've raised, I think, more than three million. Yeah, and some of that came from Uihlein, and some of that they've raised through the super PAC. But, yeah, I think they're above three
right.
million at this point.
He got in first. And as Jesse alluded, Republicans like us asked Mr. Nicholson about his political history at the Republican State Convention. This is what he said. Let's take a listen.
I've been very open about the fact I've been a Democrat, right? Like, no one here should be saying for a second I've tried to hide from any of this. I've been very clear about it. What I've also been very clear about is that my experience is what made me a conservative. So what we're going to talk about in the campaign is ideas, answers, concepts, beliefs. And there's no one who's going to ask me a question about why I believe what I do about getting our nation right side up financially, why I believe that the American idea and experiment is so exceptional and important to the future of human history. Like, and not walk away from that conversation understanding that I'm a conservative and that I believe it fully. And that, like most conversion stories, I've had to make a decision to leave something behind, to join something new, the pain that comes with that, both personally and professionally, and still stick to it, commit to it, and be ready to move forward.
And I want to issue a correction. In my lead-in, I said Nicholson spoke to reporters like us, not Republicans like us. I apologize for that. We don't do partisan politics on this show, so I apologize for that. So how soon do you expect somebody else to get in?
That's a good question. I think it'd be smart for someone else to get in at this point. Otherwise, he can dominate this back and forth coverage for a little while. But, we've seen a couple of people say they're not going to do it. So I would guess the next one in is Leah Vukmir. But we'll see.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
I did an interview with Representative Sanfilippo and Representative Robert Brooks, the Assistant Majority Leader. They want to reform the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, and they're very serious about it. You know what they said, Jesse? Right now, our WISDOT can only build highways in one way. So they want to offer four different options, which is news to me. Mm-hmm. And weren't you struck that early in the session they had to pass a bill telling WISDOT to come up with accurate cost estimates for a major project?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty amazing. The bill would, in a concession to State Senator David Craig, it would also ban roundabouts unless the local government approved it. It would create an office of DOT Inspector General. We don't have a lot of Inspector Generals. We kind of have one at the Department of Health Services. Mm-hmm. And it would say no local government could adopt a wheel tax, which is becoming increasingly popular, without a referendum. They're pretty serious about this being added to the state budget. You look for that as part of the budget whenever we get one?
I would guess, if not the entirety of this, a lot of these proposals will end up in there.
Yeah, I think so, because it was part of the Senate Republican budget package,
right.
Wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. You did a story that I found fascinating. You looked up how much cash on hand some Democratic candidates for governor had on July 1. So talk to me about that. What surprised you about the totals or lack of totals?
Oh, lack of totals is a good way to put it. Well, you know, we know that Scott Walker is going to have a lot of cash on hand. He's
how
been
much?
Doing this for a while. He's got $2.4 million on hand, and that's not counting. I think it's another $1.2 million that Rebecca Clayfish has. They can pool those together. So that's got them set up for almost $4 million already, just on hand.
Yeah.
We knew they'd have a lot, but that's starting pretty strong. And, you know, looking at – so we don't have totals for some of the candidates who have announced, Andy Gronick and Mike McCabe in particular. They have campaign committees, but they haven't filed reports yet.
Do they have to file soon, or is it
– I think that they are out for this cycle, and they'll have to file in the next one because their fundraising activity wasn't such that they needed to go in yet. So the leader in this race so far is Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Evers, just fresh off of his most recent reelection campaign.
April election. I think he spent $580,000,
something like that. And he just got into the governor's race about a week ago. So
is he officially in?
That's a good point. He's not officially in. He transferred his campaign to a governor campaign committee.
And he made a campaign hire.
That's
a pretty significant sign.
He's laying the groundwork. He's not officially in, but right. He is sitting at a little over $28,000 right now. And that's the most.
We have a governor at 2.4 and Tony's at 28. Economy of scale kind of strikes me there. Go ahead.
Yeah. So another potential candidate who hasn't officially announced yet, but formed the committees, acting under the rules that would be for a governor's race, Senator Kathleen Vinehout. She's run before, or at least thought about running before. She's at 15.5. Although I think it's worth pointing out, about 13,000 of that came from two people. Not a lot of activity so much as it is bringing in a lot of money. And then you've got Dana Walks, state rep, who we mentioned earlier, about 13.5. He's certainly been sending a lot of fundraising appeals, sending a lot of emails, so you know maybe that'll ramp up a little bit. And then the one who still hasn't decided, he's maybe going to run for mayor, maybe going to run for governor, maybe going to do both, is Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. And now we're looking for him at his mayoral campaign account, which
yes.
has been under different standards than you know the rest of these folks have been under for fundraising. But he's just a little under $5,000 right now. So long way to go.
Well, takeaway here is Democrats aren't showing the ability yet, and
yes.
It's very early,
it is early
to raise some serious bucks. Do you think they can, given that WEAC doesn't have the cash and presence and get out the vote type thing?
I think it's a struggle, yeah. And I think if you talk to even the, you know, another story that was what we were looking at around the same time was just comparing the fundraising numbers for DPW and RPW, the state parties,
yes.
and there was a significant imbalance there too. You know, DPW says, well, we're spending money early, and they are. I mean, they are giving money to state and local or to local and county parties. But they acknowledge they're never going to be able to compete with Republicans. You know, they rarely could, and they really can't now. But they're going to do other things. They're going to get on the ground. They're going to invest in grassroots and field and, you know, people power as opposed to money power. But, man, you know, $2.4 million, really, if you, you know, are being realistic, it's more like $4 million adding in the rest of that money from the lieutenant governor's account. It's a lot to compete with, and he's the head of the RGA. He's got a lot of national resources that so far Dems here don't have.
And the political pros tell you Governor Walker could raise and spend how much in, by November of 2018?
You know, I don't have that, but it's, you know, the tens of millions, what, 80 million?
25, yeah. 30, yeah. Something like
it's gonna,
that.
I mean, the last race was, what, 80 million combined, right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
When you throw in the outside groups.
Right.
So, let's understate it. The governor has a clear fundraising advantage on July 1, right?
I think that's clear. Indisputable.
Okay, let's wrap it up this way. What are your thoughts going forward on next week in terms of the next set of Foxconn? I mean, are we going to see more Democrats asking, is more details coming forth? Let's just throw it forward a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm curious to see is where are Republicans on this, because what we've heard from Foxconn, from Democrats and Republicans, is that Foxconn wants this to be a bipartisan deal. They want some Democrats on board with this. And so, you know, how many can people like Peter Barca get to back him up? Is this the Bucks deal? Is it similar to that? And in that, if you're looking to get Democrats, do some Republicans feel like they can maybe not take this vote if they don't feel like it's the right move?
But in the Capitol timetable, we have to get a budget before we can do Foxconn.
I don't know, do we?
Well, it seems to me.
We're already late on the budget. We've got a hard deadline on Foxconn.
And nobody expects Joint Finance to meet next week, do they?
Doesn't sound like it.
Stay tuned. I'm Steve Walders.
I'm Jesse Apoyan.
That's Rewind for July 28th. Jesse, thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.